is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Friday, August 2nd, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for the day. Today we have a special guest. Today we have historian researcher. I'm trying to get the correct verbiage for him, right? It's historian researcher, Christopher Davis, who is a manager now at the
Clifton Heritage Park.
Clifton Heritage Park. And on Sunday, they're having big things happen there. They're having all things Bohemian. I think this may be the second or third year for that.
Yeah, it's the second annual all things Bohemian event that will be celebrated at Clifton Heritage Park this Sunday, August 4th.
And we'll be talking about that later on the show in terms of why Bohemian should go and celebrate that, go down there and experience that, because it's a big event. A number of people drive up and spend the whole day taking advantage of the food, folks, and fun down there. So I'm excited about that. But before we start, I want to talk about surnames. I want to talk about surnames, general information, because Bohemians are very proud of their surnames, right?
Certainly.
You say their surname and they get excited and say, "We are from here. We originated from here." And if you really come across a diehard Bohemian, you say, "Oh, we originated from Scotland and Ireland and Italy and whatever it is." But I want to talk about common surnames, right? Common surnames that we have general reference to. So Bohemians can appreciate where they're from. Let's start off with like a typical name, Roel. As a researcher, what general information you heard about Roel?
Well, Roel, I'm also descended from the Roels as well, twice, the ones from the Kidd Island line and the ones from Roeltown and Roelville as well, actually. What Bohemians don't realize is actually quite a complex issue, right? And bear with me for just a minute or so. So the reality is, the harsh reality is, most Bohemians of African descent, our surnames are, in fact, our slave names. Mm-hmm. The man that owned our ancestors, or woman in some cases, that owned our ancestors, typically imposed those names on us. There's also a significant portion of people who were so-called liberated Africans, who I call displaced Africans, who in most cases, mainly because of social pressures and violence, were forced to adopt the names typically of the officer that was in charge of the ship that brought them in, or the person that they were indentured to. And this was going on even after slavery ended. So that's the first part. However, at the same time, us sharing a surname certainly is evidence of at least a kinship, right? So on these plantations, let's use the Roel one, which was the largest one at emancipation. It wasn't the largest one, period, but it was the largest one at emancipation. And when you look at the Roels, they were a group of about 377, if I'm remembering correctly. All of those people, though they shared that surname, were not related. Mm-hmm. Because on a large plantation, everyone was not family. You had all these different people, and the enslaver wanted you to marry and repopulate to grow his capital, mm-hmm. Right? So in that case, that is how that went. Now, however, it represents this kinship. So that means at some point we share ancestry on the same plantation our ancestors suffered through enslavement at the same time, right? However, because of this kinship, some of us look at it the wrong way, right? So we just say, "Oh, well, my last name is Davis, so I must be Welsh," or something like mm-hmm. that. And then some of us even go and take a DNA test, and we find that we have some Welsh blood in us.
1%.
Right. 1-2%.
And then say, "That's us."
And we run away with that. And we also use that as a sort of the sort of this justification. Oh, yes, well, I am, in fact, Welsh. And it's very troubling, especially if you do not have a known white ancestor, mm-hmm. right? Because that really points to the reality of sexual violence that existed on plantations everywhere, including the Bahamas, right?
On islands like Long Island, when there's clear white ancestry there.
Right.
Right? But you see that there's a mixture. There's a mulatto island, certainly. Right? We can clearly say they descend from a Anglophone ancestry.
Oh, yeah. Well, amazingly different islands actually even had, like, different racial codes, right? So, San Salvador is actually an island that's quite similar. Not as much as Long Island, but San Salvador does have a lot of mixtures. You know, you see a lot of, let's just call it bluntly, light-skinned people
with different hues.
Eyes and different hues and all of these different things, right? As you would see in Long Island. Now, in the case of Long Island, first of all, there's an aspect of our DNA, our genetic makeup, that is often completely overlooked. And it's overlooked because we know that according to science and history that the Lucayans are, in fact, extinct. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about an indigenous American root, right? And this even goes beyond the well-known Seminoles of Red Bay's Andrus, you know, the Bowlegs and the Lockharts. We're talking about, you know, the hour before, we just mentioned another settlement, Cherokee Sound. Mm-hmm. We have a settlement here called Yamacraw, which is also an indigenous settlement at the mouth of the Savannah River in Georgia. And then we have so many Bahamians that say, oh, well, you know, I think my Grammy was Chinese. Or look at this picture of my Grammy, and you see this woman who have Asiatic features with long, straight, jet black hair, right? And these were, in fact, indigenous Americans as well. And there has been a significant mixture with them in the Bahamian DNA that even came over with the proverbial loyalist migrations that we always talk about, hence settlements like Cherokee Sound, Yamacraw.
I heard a story that's called Cherokee Sound. But anyway, you mentioned Seminoles, certain names like Bowleg,
yeah,
right? And then you have different narrative of whether how much Native American was Bowleg, or was he Black Seminole, African, living with Seminoles but adopted by the Bowleg family. But is there any kind of registry of various surnames?
Yes.
That can trace their lineage to the Seminole Indians. So definitely Bowleg is one.
Oh, yeah. Well, myself and the place that I work at, Clifton mm-hmm. Heritage Park, we're actually in the process of a book, so I'll give you a little snippet from that. Mm-hmm. A big snippet in that we speak about the great king who is known as Bowleg. Mm-hmm. And the English perversion of his name is, in fact, Bowleg. And those people who were under his sphere of influence, under his kingdom, and even those who were his, of course, direct descendants, adopted this name that became, in the English language, Bowleg. Now, Bowleg was actually killed right at the end of the American Revolution. And so this thing was bubbling up from a long time before. And then you had other great leaders like Cow Keeper, and others, of course, and then Scipio Bowlegs and Billy Bowlegs, who didn't come here, right? So the Seminoles who came to the Bahamas, they're actually representative of those who refused to accept and or escaped in what became the Indian Removal Act and all of the things that were happening in the lead up to the Indian Removal Act, which is now proverbially known of all of the events that led to what is now called the Trail of Tears, when the United States forcibly rounded up all of these indigenous Americans. Now, what is not acknowledged, so you even have other groups like the Garifuna, these are all over the Caribbean. What is not acknowledged is how indigenous Americans gave refuge to many Africans. So you have Palancas in Venezuela and Colombia. You know, you have Palombos in Brazil, right? All of these represents these grand nations within nations that were founded by African people, and many of them were already there, and then African people ran away, and this is how the Seminoles were formed. So Seminole actually means runaway, and what is known as the Creek or Algonquin language, right? Mm-hmm. And so they were not like a tribe that already existed. Seminole in itself means runaway, and so this was always a community of mixed race people. And some people would have been black, quote unquote black, like me and you. Mm-hmm. Some people would have been everything in between. And some people would have been at least on the outward appearance, fully indigenous American as well. But this is how the Bowlegs came in. Other families came in. There's some confusion. So there's a Smith line that came in with the Seminoles as well. And you already had a lot of Smiths here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the name is Conrad. I can't remember the certain... It escapes me right now, but of course the Bowleg is the main one. And then many of their women mm-hmm. married into families like Lockhart,
mm-hmm.
Monroe, right? Many of them ended
the up Ragged Island the connection. Ragged Island. But right. I always assume that they came from the Indian from Cuba.
Some many of them did too. So even me myself, you know, my mother is from Trinidad,
mm-hmm.
And her entire mother's side of the family and all my aunties, as a matter of fact, one of my beloved aunties was visiting recently, and she put a finger in my face and said, "You always talking about Africa. Don't forget you also indigenous American."
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about my maternal line,
mm-hmm.
Which is almost, as far as I know, and according to our family history, oral history, is almost 100% indigenous American, talking about Barbados, Trinidad, and Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
right? And so even coming that way, me myself, I did the DNA test. I don't know if you heard about the project that was done.
Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, I did it too. Didn't I see you there?
I
think we did see each other that day. So cool. So, and I expect to see some of that shining through. And so that speaks to another stream of indigenous American groups that came here. So anyone from Cuba, so I'll bet if you go to the Gomez's, even if you go to the Palacios,
mm-hmm.
I think they said they came from Colombia originally. Diagla,
mm-hmm.
I think it's another one they said.
Yeah, South American.
South America, yeah. Right? Those South American.
The Lopez, group. Gomez.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure you will definitely find indigenous American blood in them as well.
What about certain names like Benabee, which can only be found in the Bahamas? There's, right. Like, you can't find a new Benabee. They said it's constructed here somehow.
Well, there's a surname that was quite prevalent called Beniba. It was Beneba. I've been trying to trace where that comes from, and it's very difficult to pinpoint, though it hasn't been kind of central to my research. But I believe that Benabee may have came from that surname, Beniba. And they also had pretty large plantations as well. And it's a lot of confusion, too, because, of course, Benabee is such a common surname,
mm-hmm.
and it's a name that you don't see much in our history, right? So I believe it may have been attached to that surname that we see there, Beniba. And I couldn't tell you where it comes from. But to parallel it to another name, so remember, even though we were a British colony,
yeah.
And then, you know, we had a lot of French immigrants coming in too, you did have a lot of people from other parts of Europe and all over. So, for example, the Scavellas, that surname came here with a man who was from Messina, Italy, and it's mm-hmm. actually an Italian name. He went to Crooked Island, like how things was going. Things was very profitable in Crooked Island then. Crooked Island was going through their own cotton boom at the time, and he decided to stay. And at one point, he became the portmaster of Crooked Island. John Scavella was the son of the original one that came.
The number of people send their names, say, if you know anything about Humes and Scots and whatever it is. But do you know anything about Humes or Clares, by the way?
Clare, they associate more with Kett Island. A lot of people associate with Kett Island. But as far as I know, because when I talk about origins of surnames in terms of the island,
mm-hmm.
right, locally, I tie it to the plantation. And I say, well, who are the biggest plantations? Because most Clares of the Bahamas, as far as I know, for the most part, are black, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Clare plantation was in Alutra. But there's a lot of intermarriage, a lot of moving around as well. This enslaver might have married this loyalist, and then they move all of their property and their goods to this island because they had a bigger estate, and then all the Clares might have, you understand? So this is how these things happened.
How prevalent was their interracial relationship during the 1900s? Because there's a narrative saying, well, my grandmother had intimacy, a relationship, a marriage with the slave master. How prevalent was that?
Well, that was extremely prevalent. And of course, that was something that was very nuanced. I could tell you now, before the 1850s, it was rare. whites in the Bahamas were ridiculed for going with another woman who would not be considered white, only in like special circumstances. So like with the Mins family, for example, all Minses are descended from a Congolese princess who saved the life of the indentured baker John Mins, who landed in the Bahamas.
All so the Mins mix.
The white Mins and the black Mins, all the sand come from Congo, you know? Right. And all that whole line came down from there. So like I say, it's just extremely, and how all of these people move around. I know you mentioned the Humes family.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, they were actually centered around Turks and Caicos. Next time I come on, I can have my laptop.
Yeah, we can have a whole show with just surnames. But we have a caller here, and they want to talk about how come in Ackland's particular, they spell Ferguson as Farkason and Farkason as Ferguson. And are they one family? Because San Salvador say they have Farkason, but they ain't necessarily related to the Ferguson Farkason in Ackland's. But let's go to this caller, and then you can respond to that. Right. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us?
Hey, good morning, Mr. Neary.
Good morning to you.
And good morning, Mr. Davis.
Good morning, morning.
I'm looking forward to Monday.
Sunday.
It's Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday. This Sunday. All things Bohemian at Clifton Heritage Park.
All things Bohemian, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, yes, I'm looking forward to that. I want to ask, McNeil, you have any idea on those?
Oh, yeah, so that's actually one of those names that are purely Seminole in a sense. Now, McNeil in itself originates in Scotland, and many of these Seminoles before they came here, because remember, these people were at risk of enslavement, Seminole means runaway, so many of them were also descended from people of African descent who ran away into Georgia and then later into what is now the Florida Everglades in these areas. So this is how those European names got inserted into the Seminole line. And then, of course, you have names like Boleg, though an English version of it, it comes from Bolek, which is an indigenous word. And the McNeils were one of those families that came over with the original Seminoles and settled in Red Bay's Andres. So that,
yes.
So there were, so as far, now there is a McNeil settlement as well in Long Island. Now, I'm not sure of the date of that McNeil settlement in Long Island. I don't know if it popped up after the arrival of the Seminoles or before, but that just represents one of those examples because you have certain names that were common. And then remember, many of these loyalists, they had been there for over two centuries at that point, well over two centuries at that point in what is now the United States. And these families would have amalgamated cousins going off and they forgetting. So certain surnames are widespread and common. So some of those Seminole names that came over already existed in the Bahamas, though they had no necessarily direct relation or connection. So, but I do know that McNeils was a part of the original Seminoles that came to the Bahamas. And it's important to note, too, that when we talk about these Seminoles, if you Google Maroon and the United States, you know, Maroons were people who formed their own communities away from the enslaver. They represent sort of the pinnacle of resistance to slavery, right? You see the Seminoles pop up when you go about the Seminoles. Then they came to the Bahamas, lived outside of the sphere of influence of the colonial government for more than a decade. And for some reason that we stopped calling them Maroons. So what these McNeils and these Bolegs and others in the Bahamas represents is they represent that pinnacle. They were, in fact, a Maroon community in the Bahamas. And we typically don't use the word Maroon when we describe ourselves. So simply put, I'm saying that the McNeils and the Bolegs should be very proud of that Seminole line, even though there is a tendency to lean more to the indigenous than to identify more as indigenous or Indian, quote-unquote Indian, than African, you understand, when it's actually a mixture of the two.
Okay, thank you very much. Callie, good?
One more thing.
Go ahead.
Is there any African that was enslaved or here living here in the Bahamas? I want to know. Have any of them been able to hold on to their original name?
I don't know a single case of that happening. Sometimes they would have retained their first name at best. So the best example, actually, and this was a man who on paper was not enslaved. He was at Clifton Heritage Park. His name was Cujo Wiley. And a lot of it had to do actually with the colonial atmosphere simple cultural nuances in language like pronunciation. So you found names like Cujo being kept because it was so common it could be said. But if certain other names, if it sounded too complex for them to say, and it also went along with the forced baptism of Africans, which was essentially a policy in all European colonies in the Caribbean. And with that baptism, you were typically given a quote-unquote Christian name. But however, our naming culture was one that still stayed there. So you will find that during the days of slavery, people would name their children like Monday or Tuesday. This is very much connected to naming customs throughout West Africa, where people, which means born on a Friday, they would name you like after the day that you're born. Big part of their culture. But for the most part, especially in terms of surnames, I am not aware of a single African who was able to retain that. Even the Aeneas family, who are aware of their names, you wouldn't be able to see that. And this was something that was also done for survival purposes. If you were to keep your African name, it would have showed that you probably weren't baptized and all of these things. That would have made life extremely difficult for you and your family, particularly when we're talking about the 18th, 19th, and even early 20th century.
Okay, thank you very much, Carl. So what do you think happened with Ferguson Farquharson?
Oh, so Ferguson Farquharson, as far as I know, is actually two lines, right? We do have Fergusons.
Yeah, we have Fergusons.
Right, we have Fergusons. They were actually, as I remember, it was the bigger at emancipation, the enslaver of the Fergusons was Henderson Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in 1833, they had an uprising on the Ferguson plantation in Exuma. And when these people, you know, they have their brothers and sisters and they go to different islands, this speaks to the proverbial story that has been passed down through generations. Oh, it was three brothers.
Mm-hmm. Two brothers.
One brother one going to the island, one going to Lutra. And when you look in the slave register, you say, oh, yeah, you're right, but not really, mm-hmm. right? They was in your family. They was your slave masters moving around like that, right? And that's what you find there, too. Now, in Auckland, it was George Farquharson. So these are the two main slaveholders in the Bahamas at that time, hence the main progenitors of these names among the black population. So that is why I'm speaking in regard to that. Not that I'm, of course, focusing on that, but this is the reality of most of our movement when we're talking about the early Bahamians, when these people with these names first arrived here, right? And so as far as I know, that was it. George Farquharson had a plantation there. Now, that may have happened too, because what you find, for example, many of these people are doing administrative work. It was mostly whites, and many of them were foreign. Many of them were British officials who were sent. You know, so, and you know how we in the Bahamas, we talk, especially if you go to make fun of my own island, you go to Cat Island. I have an uncle named Wendell, and then he migrated to the United States. And you know what they record his name as? Vendel with a V.
With a V.
Right, you know, so
that's how he pronounced E-W.
That's how he pronounced
E-W. Vendel.
Right, and a spirit of the language and the dialect, or just simply don't understand it. That is sometimes what happens too. So it could literally be a simple, even clerical error. And that clerical error would probably be more in line with the oral history that comes out of Auckland that say the Fergusons and the Farquharsons are one. And of course, the big Farquharson too was also Charles Farquharson in San Salvador. Right.
Yeah. I have all kind of names people throwing out right now. But is there space? I'm going to come to you right now, caller. Is there space for a registry of names where people, there's a narrative for each surname, which island they originate from, the color complex in terms of there's white and bristers, there's black and bristers, there are white nose, there's black nose,
right.
You know, there's white smiths, there's black smiths, there's white Bethels with double L and one with an L and an E, you know, light burn, right. Or the E at the end or one with an N. Yeah. Uh-huh. Is there space for someone to create a narrative?
Oh,
just
yeah.
To explain how the families either relate or do not relate.
Well, it requires monumental research, to be honest. Even as much time and hours that I spent every single day just researching random things, inclusive of our surnames, you know. So certain ones I'm quite well versed on. Certain ones I have no clue. Certain ones I know a little bit about. To speak to the Lightbourns, let's probably give a good example. Lightbourn was a name that was here prior to the arrival of the Loyalists. So prior to the
Lutra Adventurous name.
Right, still there. But then there was another line of Lightbourns that did come through that. And they was actually distant cousins. So they were still related. And many of them were linked to Bermuda. And then there was a man named Joseph Lightborn. This man had 19 children.
So all kind of different Lightborns.
Right. So even this Lightborn separation started since the about the 1770s. You understand?
Let me quickly go to this call because we got to start talking about your event, what happened in this Sunday. All certainly, things Bohemian at Clifton. But we soon talk about that. Let's go, caller. Producer Pastor, call through. Go ahead, Cody Canaris.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Several questions I want to ask. How true is this? Because he seems to be a very learned young man in history, right? Is it true that, or how true is it that during the era of the Duvalier era in Haiti from 1957 until, I say, the late 60s, many of the mulattoes and so-called Haitians of European descent left the country, right?
Right.
How true is it that many of them went to the Americas and many actually landed in the Bahamas? How true is it that many of those families and their descendants are from islands like Long Island?
Yeah, so
thank you much, Carl.
There's a lot of truth to that. However, not within that time period. By the time, now there were whites and mulattoes who left during the Duvalier era. I think it's important to note too that Duvalier was a CIA supported operative, and he was supported by the United States.
Is Duvalier born in Bahamas?
That's not true. People say he born in
Bahamas. He born in Bahamas?
No, he's not. He's okay. Not. Yeah,
okay,
he's not. Duvalier is an extremely common name, not just in Haiti, throughout the Caribbean.
Because you have Duvaliers here.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's almost like Davis. Yeah, we have Duvaliers here from a long time. So we're talking about during the Haitian Revolution. Mm-hmm. That's when the Duvaliers arrived here.
Okay.
Or the name, let me say the name Duvalier arrived here. You know,
are there any Anglicized Creole Haitian names like from that Haitian Revolution certainly that came to the Bahamas to say now they're Bohemian?
Oh yeah, certainly. And of course this Anglicization was because of the stigmas that surrounded being from a place like Haiti, right? And this was going on, I think I spoke about this one time on your show. From you could actually almost pinpoint the origins of this let's call it xenophobic attitude here in the Bahamas, call it what it is. Because in April 1795, as the Haitian Revolution was popping up, the greatest revolution that humans have ever realized ever happened right there down south to our neighbors, right? And what people don't realize is in 1795, they were fighting against the British, the Spanish, and the French, as well as their allies and all sorts of others. And in 1795 of April, that is when they defeated the British at Mole St. Nicholas. Mm-hmm. And you could actually see the fires from that defeat from Managua. And from places like Inagua, right? You're going to see it from Machu Town, right? Mm-hmm. Now, at this point, they had already been absorbing all of these, quote-unquote, French migrants. So this is what the caller was referencing to. Most of those people were actually mulattoes. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about Haitian migration to the Bahamas, pretty much in the 20th century, you're not talking about the middle class and the wealthy, generally speaking. You're talking about, you know, people who running away, you know, trying to
for
get
economic
away. It's, right, for economic reasons, you know.
And before then, we had a wealthier
right
Haitian population.
Certainly. And also,
mulattoes.
And, right. And then also, as it existed in the Bahamas at one point, you know, today, all of us black, we sort of understand this shared history and shared destiny that we have, right? So no matter the hue, you know, we saying, yeah, man, we black or African descent, however you want to refer to it. But back then, even in the Bahamas, you know, your shade of skin kind of placed you in a completely different racial category, especially in Haiti, in around 120 gradations of race. And so a mulatto was not considered a black person back then, you know, and that's a key point to mention as well.
Before we go to this call, and then before we transition, Pointillés. The Pointillés from Haiti?
No.
What do you mean the Pointillés ain't from Haiti?
No, they might have the name there, but the ones that here are not from Haiti.
Where are the Pointillés from?
The Pointillés, they are loyalists of, if I remember correctly, Scottish extraction. But originally, they came there. They are a Francophone English family. Mm-hmm. If I believe, they were actually a part of the Huguenots. The Huguenots who kind of defected from France went to England, you know, and became British citizens. The Devos and the Poitiers are a part of that. Mm. And you also notice this sort of clustering of people of similar ilks and similar origins that go way, 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 way back. So you notice this clustering of those sort of Scottish Francophone names down there in southern Kidd Island. You notice a clustering of German British names right there in Arkansas, the Hasty, you understand? And though they are, and no one, it's funny because no one had a question if Hano and Hasty, you know, but as soon as the name sounds French, we saw
look at it. You're from down south.
Right.
Let's go to these callers and then we can try transition in now. Go ahead, Cody. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning.
Talk louder for me.
Yeah, hello, no, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him. When he mentioned about the Charles Farquharson and the Farquharson's estate, has he done any research on that miss recording of the will, original will and archives that they have there as James Farquharson, who was the son of Charles Farquharson?
Yeah, I've actually heard a lot about that issue that's going on, and I heard that there's even some missing information from it.
Okay.
But most of my information regarding the Farquharson speaks more to our heritage and our culture and the two slave revolts that happened there, more so than tracing the you know, the commonage and the ownership of the land itself.
But what it is, Charles Farquharson made his will in 1823. That's my great James was his son. And
yeah,
he had two other sons, one named Charles.
James is the one who got beat up from another man named Alec Farquharson because he keep going after the man's wife. And he was his illegitimate son. Because that's where the confusion comes in, because he never, though everyone knew of his son, I don't know if he ever claimed that publicly in official records.
Okay, yeah, but what I'm saying here is his will.
Right.
They have this property. There's three sons, Charles, James, and William.
Okay.
Right? James was named as to be the executor, and you check that will in archives. I have a copy of it somewhere in my box of records that I don't have present with me. I mentioned this to Aaron and Nui from last year. You will see that James did it, and there in the original book, that the front page has gone missing. But it is really his dad, the original loyalist, Charles Farquharson. I had found a copy of the original in the Registry of Records. I found a copy where it was recorded, and all the recordings of what they have there, and the original thing shows that is his will. You see, because he had three sons and two daughters.
Right.
They only had two sisters. One didn't get married, and the other one married. Stevenson. What's his name? Henry Stevenson.
I mentioned to the team caller that he needs to bring his records to you all so y'all can use it for thinking.
Yeah,
but we can
certainly
take this quick break now, and then we'll transition and start talking about your event. About a number of people still calling and texting about their surnames and what you generally know about them. So we'll try pepper all of that in.
Certainly.
And include that. Then I'll invite you for like a two-hour show.
All
we go through a lot of surnames.
Okay,
anyway, certainly. This is Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We're talking to historian researcher. All right. Bohemian historian, researcher, Christopher Davis, who is a manager at, tell me again, Clifton
Heritage National Park.
And you have an event when today again?
Sunday, August 4th. This Sunday, August 4th, we have an event. Details coming after the break.
Yes. We'll be right back.
Join us in helping to support the Bahamas Children's Emergency Hostel. When doing your shopping at Janae's Uniform Center, just drop your coins or more in the special donation box.
You can also help by donating vitamins, snacks, medicines, books, and more.
Visit the Bahamas Children's Emergency Hostel directly, or you can donate online at bceh242.org or call 361-4124 or 807-6155.
And thank you for helping us.
The Bahamas Children's Emergency Hostel. Together, we can make a difference.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavondre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
Attention, all fall 2024 applicants to University of the Bahamas. The new academic year is fast approaching, and we're thrilled to welcome you to UB. But first, we need your help. If you've started your online application, now is the time to submit all outstanding supporting documents. Make sure to send in your transcripts and copies of relevant passport pages urgently. To secure your acceptance to UB, your application must be fully processed. And remember to keep checking your emails for important updates and reminders. Orientation and advisement for new students kicks off on Wednesday, August 7th, and classes begin Monday, August 19th. This message is brought to you by the Office of Recruitment and Admissions at University of the Bahamas.
Planning a trip to the beautiful Bahamas? Look no further than Hertz Car Rental. With convenient locations in Nassau and Freeport, Grand Bahama, we are here to get you there. Whether you're exploring the vibrant streets and sights of Nassau or soaking up the sun in Freeport, Hertz has the perfect ride for your adventure. Book at our Freeport location at 352-3297 or Nassau location at 377-8684 or visit our website at Hertz. Bahamas.com. All major credit cards accepted. Hertz Car Rental. Your journey starts with us.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, we're talking to a historian researcher at the...
Where you work again?
The Clifton Heritage National Park.
I just like you saying it. That's why I stop and say, where you work again? You say it out loud. Okay, let's start talking about your event, and then we'll go back to the surnames. This Sunday at what time?
This Sunday, we begin at 10 a.m.
That's early in the morning.
Right. 9, we going all day till sundown.
Okay, so listen, from 10 a.m. until...
This is going to be a big time event.
This is right? A big event.
Then. Oh, yeah, and it's going to be a lot of fun, especially for those of us like me. You know, as a Kid Island man.
So these people call in and ask about their surnames. Can they come out there and look for you and ask for these surnames?
I was just going to suggest that. So any text, and I'm sure we get to a few more before we end, but any text to any person that wants to call in that can't get there, just come and see me at Clifton Heritage Park at our event on Sunday. Or you could come on any other day. We open almost every single day of the year. I think Christmas Day might be the only day we actually
Christmas
close.
Is a holiday for the enslaved.
I guess so. Right?
Go ahead. So tell me about the event.
So now I know Clifton Heritage is quite a distance away, and so this is an important point to mention. For those that don't want to make the long drive out at Clifton, there will be buses leaving from the Marathon Mall. Mm-hmm. Get there before 10 a.m., of course. You know, us Bahamians, now we go with time sometimes. And then there's another one for the evening session, if you will, leaving at 2:30.
Wait, so you're picking up people?
Yeah, from Marathon Mall and from, you know, so there's those two.
Is that a round trip type thing? Or just a pickup?
Yeah, it's round trip, okay. and your fee is included in that as well. And now the entrance is actually $5 for adults.
That's all?
$5 for adults. You get a major discount that day. And kids 15 and under are absolutely free.
Okay, so if you're 15, you come into Clifton Heritage on that day, Sunday, for free.
Yeah.
And adults only paying $5 to get inside.
That's just to get inside. And when you come inside, we have vendors, man, all sorts of culture.
When you say vendors, what do you mean, like what?
Man, food. Mm-hmm. They get one woman, right? She is too... physical therapy, massages infused with bush medicine.
Mm.
You know, I ain't gonna say too much because I want people to come out, but mine.
So you have all kinds of vendors.
All sorts of vendors. This is something for those who Bahamian, proud to be Bahamian, want to support Bahamian. You come out there. And of course, we'll have our living history tours that will be happening on that day as well.
What do you mean by living history tours?
So living history is where it's a lot more interactive. We will have people in period clothing And of course, it'll be all properly contextualized. We'll have the rock oven going. And of course, I'll be giving presentations as well as our tour guide. Shout out to them, Miss Renita Pratt, Miss Octavia Benson, and the brilliant Patricia Pettikin. You know, all of them will be there as well as many other employees and myself.
Pettikin, that's an Abaco name. See, I know for surnames too. Go ahead.
Well, others will tell you it's a Tyson Gagas name.
Okay, no problem. Go ahead.
So I know. So it's just a lot of fun out there. Fun for kids and adults.
So food, folks, and fun.
Food, folks,
history
and fun.
History galore.
Right? Now, the tours, the Living History Tour, which is going to be extremely fun, and you're getting free treats on your tour. The tour for adults is $15, and the tour for kids is $10.
Okay.
Right, and then you get the tastings out the rock oven. It's highly interactive, of course. Learn about the history of Junkanoo. And we're also doing a special segment on emancipation and the Bahamas and how it relates to the Bahamas. So we're there. So for those who are really interested in their surnames, really interested, you will actually be able to see a document when you come out there to see me on Sunday. And if your surname is there, you'll be able to see how much the people that enslaved your ancestors received.
But you have a document there that you can look at?
They can be right there presented. So for the real history buffs and those who want, you know, now for some people it's a tough pill to swallow, but this is the reality of our
slavery
history.
Bitter, no. I don't like talking about slavery.
But this Emancipation Week, and we need to take a different view and a different outlook. And some of those new perspectives will be expressed out there. But it's simply, you know, a lot of us are owed a lot of money. You know, we had a caller just now, you know, and you could hear, you know, the frustration in people's voice. And we talking about how many of our ancestors were not just stripped of their humanity, but stripped of generational wealth, stripped of so many things, you know. And so though we're out there to have fun, there'll also be a heritage aspect, and that heritage aspect will be fun too. But for those that want to go there, I'll be out there all day. Answering any questions that means to themselves, their family.
Definitely, we need a surname repository so people can search themselves. Behemoths are craving information about their surname and who they are. Let's go quickly to this slang, and then I'll start asking like rapid questions or like give you a surname, and if whatever you know, quickly answer so we can go through all these names too.
Okay.
Go ahead, colleague. Can you hear me?
Hey, Mr. Neary, this is me again. You know, I love the surname thing when you talk about that.
Yes, ma'am.
I need whatever information you could give me on the surname of Moxie. I'll hang up and listen.
I know Andrew's people, Moxie.
Yeah, Moxie is one that I'm not too well versed on, but I know it's Andrus. I know it's Andrus.
I get two texts with Delvo. Where the Delvo? Where you saying the Delvo come from?
We can get in there right when I finish the Moxie. The Moxies are another one who are very much intertwined with the Seminoles of North Andrus.
Really?
Yeah. That's one of those ones I don't know too much about, and I'd have to like go to my notes and reference my notes.
What about the surname Oliver? Is Oliver one of those Seminoles names?
No, not as far as I remember or know, but I know that there's a large group of Olivers who come from the Southern Caribbean, beyond Haiti. So we're not talking about Haiti, we're talking about Jamaica. I think it was Martinique, another group. I actually had a schoolmate in high school. Her surname is Oliver.
What would the name, like Wild Goose? Because that sounds Indian.
Yeah, so Wild Goose is one of those that's attached to that. However, it did come through the loyalist migrations as well.
Okay, so it's white wild geese.
But also, to remember now, some of these indigenous groups amalgamated with Europeans. And it seems that there's evidence that even some of these people, like some of those that went to Cherokee Sound, may have been of partial indigenous American descent as well. But Wild Gooses, I see Wild Gooses popping up the name in like Bahamian newspapers from the 1780s, and you don't see much of it before, as far as I know.
Okay, let's go back to Delvo.
So Delvo were one of those that came here with the during the Haitian Revolution. So a lot of people don't understand the impact that the Haitian Revolution had. And many of those names that, sound French and all that stuff originated here during the Haitian Revolution. But it's important to remember now, the majority of these people came as French emigres. So these were whites and some of them mulattoes who willingly migrated here. But the blacks who came with them at that time were, in fact, enslaved.
So you're saying that some mulattoes came here with slaves?
Yes.
Into the Bahamas? And white. I mean, they adopted their slave master names.
Yeah.
And then they have the branches.
Right. Well, the overwhelming majority were whites. A very few were mulattoes. But even with those mulattoes, remember, typically, they had a white father and a black mother. I think we could put two and two together there. Almost in every single case. I have never found a single, and even if it did happen, it would have probably been something that was shameful. And within that, in the French colonies, they tended to operate a little differently in the way that they looked at race. And you did have a lot of them who gained a certain status as being mulatto, because remember, you had these different classifications of race, even in the Bahamas. So that's why in the Bahamas, even when you look at our census, they say blacks and coloreds.
Yeah, two different types of people.
Right, right.
Like the surname Bryce, are there white Bryce and black Bryce?
Yeah. Bryce, as far as I remember, is Abaco. And I believe they were pre-loyalists. They were one of those pre-loyalists. In fact, you would find that, especially in the Lutheran house, so many of the pre-loyalist names were centered around the Lutheran, particularly after the loyalists kind of forcibly gained political control. You know, so the loyalists, of course, mash up they mash up the black people. Obviously, they were slave owners, slave traders, implemented systems of white supremacy and black torture that existed before they arrived.
So, more the Lutheran adventurers had a mixture of black and white living together in quote harmony type thing? Or
I wouldn't say in harmony, but it was certainly lesser. The Bahamas could not have been identified as a full. So, even after we became a colony, it would not be until I think about the 1760s that you even see, because it was actually mostly more whites than blacks. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, the great emancipator, a lot of Ecuador, Gustavo Vasa, he was shipwrecked in the Bahamas. So this is the guy who was one of the main characters in emancipation in Britain. Mm-hmm. And his life is, before he even write his first document, his life was saved in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And at that time, this is in the 1760s, he was actually shocked to see that, you know, whites and blacks were working together on these ships. It was very different than that overt, very profitable plantation system that he saw. Now, remember now, this is pre-loyalist. Mm-hmm. This is when the Bahamas is very scantily populated. Mm-hmm. So just to put it in perspective, by 1771 or so, the demographics of the Bahamas was like half and half white and black, and about 40% of blacks were enslaved. Mm-hmm. By 1788, that demographic shifted to like 5-1 white to black, mm-hmm. and over 90% of blacks were now enslaved.
Someone enslaved everybody. You ain't free no more.
Right. You know, now our population swelled tremendously at that time, and then there was migration. So that's what happened, you see. So it doesn't mean that the Bahamas was all peachy clean, because you had incidents of revolts and uprisings before the loyalists even came to the Bahamas.
Are you familiar with the name Cargill?
Cargill, that's another one that's associated heavily with the Seminoles.
Okay.
So as far as I know, Cargill, McNeil, Lockhart, sorry, Cargill, McNeil, Bowleg, those three names came exclusively with that. There were other names, but most of them were names that were already here in the Bahamas. So just by looking at the records, sometimes it was difficult to, you know.
There are two names I want to call Lutheran names, Culmer and Carey. I know bright-skinned Culmers and blue-black Culmers. Then I know bright-skinned Careys,
right.
And then them blue-black Careys. Where they come from?
I know a bit about the Careys. Now, they pre-loyalists, as I was saying, when the loyalists came here, they were the ones that actually termed the coin Conky Joe. You know, that's a very loaded term here. So it is, of course, a racial term. Mm-hmm. We use it now to refer to whites, but initially, it was a term that the loyalists used to describe the whites that they already met in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And it was meant to insult them on many fronts, and it was often overplayed as well, you know, but that is how they ended up in Alutra. Now, they were here before that, mm-hmm. before the loyalists started to come. The Culmers, I can't remember well, but I could speak to the Careys more so. Now, this is where our history is so complex. So the Careys, John Carey, he was one of those that actually accepted the pardon of Woodes Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
So the Careys are actually descended.
They're pirates.
Right. The white Careys, they mm-hmm. descended from that. And then they owned slaves, of course.
But they owned slaves too?
Oh, yes.
I like them more then.
Yeah, right. They owned slaves. Well, to be honest, you know, most white families owned slaves
in
the Bahamas at one point. I mean, it is what it is.
I need to go back to the caller right now, but quickly, mm-hmm. Inagua have what they call Inagua Red, right? Acklands have Acklands Red. They're not necessarily white.
Right.
But like how Long Island have Long Island mm-hmm. Red. The Nixons and the Darvilles or the D'Arvilles, you know what you know about them?
Well, I know that the Darvilles, that's an interesting one, because the Darvilles, they are actually more centered around Turks and Caicos. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of them said to come from Inagua too, but that's probably due to that proximity. Just like how you have Strawn and Kid Island and San Salvador and Rum Key,
mm-hmm.
even though they mainly, as I know it, from Rum Key.
Okay.
And then the ones that went to Kid Island was a little later, mm-hmm. right? Originally, I should say. Now, with the Darvilles, they come from Bermuda too, mm-hmm. and Turks and Caicos, because Bermuda and Turks and Caicos had this very close relationship. That is why when the Eleutheran adventurers came, they were mandated to only settle in the northern part of the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
because the Bermudans had already established themselves in making salt plantations and salinas in the southern Bahamas.
Okay.
So even before the Eleutherans, we actually had people of African descent who were enslaved in raking salts in what is now the southern Bahamas, including Turks and Caicos.
Let me squeeze this caller in. But there's such a thing as Inagua Red then. You call them white, they get mad.
But remember, there's a lot of moving around too. You had a lot of colonial officials coming in and out. Remember, I mentioned the Scavellas, this random man from Italy who ended up coming here and moving here. You had a lot of that movement. Sometimes the Inagua Red don't necessarily come from the days of slavery. Sometimes it might have come from some fella from Germany, moved there in the 1910s.
Taking care of the flamingos and things.
Right.
Let's go quickly this caller. Right. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, good afternoon.
We're getting ready to over, so I want you to squeeze this in quickly.
Yeah, how you doing? Is that a Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Davis, you ever heard about William Charlo, who came with the Lutheran Adventures?
William Charlo?
Yes, sir.
Charlow,
yeah.
I don't know much about him, but I'm familiar with the name, and I know that he was
my great name over the Lutheran Adventures.
All right, okay.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So Charlow is one of those names that
from England.
Oh, that's interesting. Because it's so funny because I heard people trying to say Charlow was from our neighbors to the south. You see, and that's one of those places where this misinformation could creep in. And people are just looking the way your name sounds.
No, I have the original will where they came from England.
All right.
His name is even in the history book.
Right.
Coming from with the Lieutenant William Charlow.
All right.
He wrote on the Bahamas.
Right.
Okay. All right, sir.
All right, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
People, behemoths, are interested in their surname. But let's go remind everyone about what happened on Sunday again as we continue these names. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So all things Bahamian event at Clifton Heritage Park. If you all want to continue this conversation with me on a one-on-one, you could come out there to the event. I'll be there. Of course, from 10 a.m., we starting and we going until sun is down. There will be pickups at the Mall of Marathon. And at Golden Gate Shopping Plaza, the buses leave at 10 a.m., so you got to get there before that. And then the evening trip leaves at 2:30. We'll be having Living History at the park as well, so the Heritage Tour. So entrance to the park is $5 for adults and free for kids 15 and under. And you have all the vendors, all the good food, all the good cultural items, souvenirs, you name it. Once it's Bahamian, it's going to be out there. We're also going to have entertainment. Live entertainment by the Synergy Band.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that can be good.
It's something to do on a Sunday, especially after church.
Oh, yeah, right. After church is the perfect event, family event as well. And the Living History part that we're doing, the Heritage Tour, is 15 for adults and 10 for kids. You know, we got the rock oven going. We could be learning about Junkanoo. We could be learning about the origins of rake and scrape, all things Bahamian. Or even if you just want to come and pick my brain and ask about the family, and even if I don't know about it, I might have access to a lot of these records. You know, I've done a lot of research in a lot of families, and everything I see on the Bahamian family, I save it. So I may not just have looked at it yet, but I might have something on it. So come out there and see me, especially if you're interested in that. Or if you just want to come out and have some fun, take the Heritage Tour, go on the beach, or just go on the beach, support the Bahamian vendors. Everything out there is going to be authentically Bahamian.
This is your second year you're doing this.
And
this is a yearly event. Every August 5th August.
Really, every emancipation celebration, actually, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us that couldn't make it to our regatta, I think Black Point and Kid Island regatta this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I know Kid Island is this weekend. I'm not sure about Black Point. But, if you're missing out, you know, come out to Clifton Heritage Park. It's a great thing to come out after church, as Mr. Nuri was saying. Again, You could drive out there. I know it's a long drive, but that's a great drive for a holiday weekend. And if you're not willing to make the drive, you can meet us at one of our pickup locations at the Mall of Marathon or the Golden Glades Plaza. We also have some phone numbers that you could call as well. So one of those phone numbers is... Sorry, let me just... 477-0978.
Get it again?
477-0978.
What is phone number for?
This is for if you want to register, if you want to find out more details, just find out what time the pickup is, just in case you may have missed anything that was being said on the show. We also have our website, tourcliftonheritage.com. Sign up for our event this Sunday at Clifton Heritage Park, or you could just come out there. Again, pickups, Marathon Mall, Golden Gates Plaza at 10 a.m. and at 2:30 a.m. We have Bahamian Vendors, Synergy Band, a Living History Heritage Tour, and of course, I'll be out there to have any discussions on anything and all things Bahamian.
That's Christopher Davis, Bahamian History Researcher at the Clifton Heritage. Go ahead, you point
Clifton Heritage National Park this Sunday.
This Sunday, starting at what time?
10 a.m. until the sun goes down.
Yes, this has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. We'll invite him back to talk about this again and these surnames. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
This is Guardian Radio.